All right, everybody. Yay! Today we have none other than a very sweet friend, Mr. Stephen Neese, who is a dynamic, empowering SLP. And his professional love is all things augmentative, alternative, assistive communication, AAA, because I feel like you have to add that third A in there for him. And he got the cutest baby girl, who I understand just got over the creeping crud along with our tiny humans. And his wife owns, I'm going to give her a shout out, The Alley in downtown Aiken. And it is the coolest pub ever. So if you ever are in the mood to go get a killer pint and check out some beautiful horses in Aiken, South Carolina, please check out The Alley Tap Room. But Stephen, hi.
Hey, Michelle, that's a pretty good intro. And thanks for the wife plug, too. I appreciate it.
I love her. She is like, Stephen's like, I don't know, 6'5", it feels like. And your wife is like, what, 5'2", maybe?
She's 5'1". Yeah. Five and a half of one.
See, but like, and I love that she owns the restaurants and the pubs and you're the speech pathologist. This right. Just makes my heart so happy.
It's an interesting dynamic. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, wait, before we go to AAC, did she open a second restaurant as well?
Yeah, she owns a restaurant, I mean, and she's a partner of Whiskey Alley, which is a restaurant in Aiken as well. And then she is part owner of Draft Society, which is another bar in Augusta, Georgia. So just across the state line.
Yes. So if you're an SLP or a caregiver and you're looking for a cold one, go check out her pubs. Yay!
Yes.
Okay, now all back to all things AAC. Okay, so we had you on, I want to say like a year and a half ago you came on.
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yep, before a crazy life of all things Skisha consumed, because that's what it
does. Yeah, that did that for a while.
Yeah, been there, done that, totally understand. And during that time, you were the lead AT consultant with Aiken County Public Schools. And just recently, you had quite the joyful move. And can you tell us where you are and where you're imparting wisdom now?
Absolutely. So unfortunately, leaving Aiken County, I loved working there, worked there for almost a decade. So it's definitely bittersweet. But now I'm going to be full-time teaching at Columbia College. So I'm very excited about that move.
Nice. So folks, if you're listening and you're interested in getting your, I'm sorry, dog just came downstairs to hulk a dog loogie. That was really awkwardly done. That has no merit on Columbia College whatsoever. Sorry, Anne-Marie. But Columbia College has a wonderful speech language pathology assistant program here in South Carolina in Columbia. Also, Georgia O'Keeffe was a professor there, and they have an amazing art gallery and artwork like spread throughout. So if you love floral paintings and, you know, dynamic professors, check out Columbia College. Okay. Yay. Yes. Okay. So today we get to talk about, this episode's kind of geared towards our more complex patients,
yes,
which I love. Right before we started recording, I was telling Stephen that right now in my 2.5 days of work, I'm running 28 AAC trials because that just doesn't.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's a lot. And it's comedic because we have so many people have their trial devices or are getting their approvals for their final devices. So, but like everybody picked the same background. So we have a lot of blue backgrounds. Okay. So before they go out the door, we're like, is this the correct child and their device? So like, yay for group AAC sessions and for treatments with OT. I think I'm just going to start putting like stickers on the back. And be Yes. But actually, that's a really good idea. That's where we are in the world. But this was not something that when I started out as an SLP, I ever would have, one, imagined myself doing, or two, ever been. I'm still not confident 100%. And I don't think anybody ever should be, because I feel like if you reach that point, then you're going to miss something.
Right. You're not going to continue to learn because it's changing constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But I'm confident enough to recognize that when I have a child that's really complex, I need to call on my council of elders. And those elders may not be like older than me. It's just the council of wisdom. And that's when I pick up the phone and I call a team. And thank you, Kelsey Peterson with Talk to Me Technologies and Lane Riles with Control Bionics, because you two have saved my catuchus the month of June for dropping all the things and popping over and doing hands-on trainings. But Stephen's also there. He is in the council of elders to call. So how did you find your way there? How did you find your way to working with medically complex patients with AAC?
Well, you know, it wasn't a direct road at all. And it wasn't something that I, like you were saying earlier, expected to do. You know, going through grad school, I didn't think, okay, AAC was going to be what I was going to focus on at all. It just kind of happened over the years. As you probably know, you kind of end up having these interests that you didn't know what you didn't know from the start. So you kind of go through it and try out different things and find your specialty that you're just really interested in. And I guess looking back, I should have thought that this would be a place I would land. Just my interest and love of technology in general has always been there. So this was kind of a really good fit. That need was in Aiken County. So it kind of an opportunity presented itself. And then I decided to jump in and try that. And then I really, really enjoyed it. So and then it just kind of kept building and changing each year from there.
Nice. I mean, for me personally, it feels like a natural, like the last several years treating all these little ones with PFD, there's like such a natural connection with AAC.
Right.
Because a lot of them have, you know, an underlying medical etiology that makes spoken language more complex, right?
Yeah.
And so just it kind of goes hand in hand. That being said, feeding therapy with a speech generating device can make for sticky, actual, literally sticky situations. So like that's been, anybody listening, may I make a recommendation to CAM scan the target vocabulary and laminate it such that when you're doing messy food play, you don't, you know, inadvertently damage a multi-$1,000 device. So,
and that's a good point. Having that low tech, mid tech, high tech, all of the options for the context makes a ton of sense.
Yes.
So using the low tech makes sense.
Yes, because do as I say, not as I do. Yay for insurance. So like on that note, let's awkward turtle to a different topic. Okay. So, oh my God, Stephen, I really thought I broke one once, but like, we're okay. It's fine. Yeah. It was in my defense, we were making a chocolate pudding and running trucks through with like graham crackers and making mud. And it was a grand day, but yeah, Q-tips are a girl's best friend. Okay. So when working with complex patients, let's start there. And I'm thinking, okay, first, folks, one, always assume competency. Just because a child is non-speaking does not mean that they are not holding those thoughts in, okay? And this includes our early intervention. I see a lot of EI cases, and I'm often told, well, you know, they're too young to work on a device. And it kind of cracks me up because the irony is that child knows how to hack into YouTube Kids to play Cocomelon very, very easily. If they can do that, I bet we can probably use a speech generating device.
Yeah.
So just putting that thought out there. But what about our medically complex little ones? Where do you start? What are your thought processes there?
Yeah. So, I mean, a big part of it is thinking about access, and you kind of hit on it, accessing YouTube and going to Cocomelon or whatever.
Gotta hate that thing.
Right. Yeah. And I think sometimes we feel as SLPs that access really isn't our thing, which I guess kind of can be true. But if we're looking at it holistically, we have to think about that. When I think about complex cases, I really think about access and how that is going to happen. And one big piece of it is looking at your other team members. You're talking about earlier, you know, calling on this team of elders, but you have to look at your PTs, OTs, ATPs, which is assistive technology professionals. And if you're working in the schools, maybe the special education teacher or the gen ed teacher can have some input in all of these different things. And that's when I really see a lot of positivity, when we're working together as a very, very broad team. So a bunch of different people are providing input to find this unique novel solution for this unique individual. That's kind of the overarching theme of it. But it's like, okay, so how do you get there? And I really think you have to get there by knowing what's available. So if they can't access it in a very direct way, what other options are there? And so you may be that team member to spark that idea to say, okay, we need to go with this, or we need to go with that, or let's give this a shot. Instead of, I don't know how they can access this, let's move on. So I think there is a little bit of a chasm there, because we're talking about access, but we're thinking about communication. And sometimes that access has to come first, and we have to figure out how to do that before we can really, really focus on communication. But there's ways to do that at the same time. Maybe we're doing some low-tech stuff to access that communication part of it as we're still continuing to figure out how to access a more robust high-tech device. And really, technology has provided us with so many different options here. So that's really, really exciting. And that's going to continue to move. That's going to continue to improve for us. So even the kiddo that you think, okay, there's no option that I'm aware of, there's something that at least is coming. So it's really good to know all of the different options. And I'll kind of do a little brief overview of all those different options so you can kind of get yourself thinking. So next time you're working with a complex case, you're like, I don't really know how they can access it. Well, maybe one of these options can help. And it doesn't mean like, okay, that was the solution, but at least it's a starting point. You can start collaborating with that team. So, all right, let's try this out. Let's try this out. A ton of trial with these kiddos and utilizing AAC in general. And so really you have two big subsections, direct selection and then indirect selection. And really direct selection is just using any body part whatsoever, or even an extension of a body part to select, indicate, activate a device of any kind, really. And then you have the other side of it, and that's indirect selection. You really want to go with a direct selection option first before resorting to indirect selection, just because indirect selection is not as efficient. So creating the messages is going to be a good bit slower. Communicating is going to be slower. And also it's cognitively taxing as well. And really what indirect selection is using a switch. So you're using a switch to move through a series of potential items, toys, messages, just core vocabulary, what have you, to select something. But the kind of key there is start with direct selection, and we'll talk about all those different options in just a second. And then you drop down to that indirect selection if we can't find something that works there in the direct selection area. And then after indirect selection, so you have direct, indirect, and it's like, okay, I still can't find anything. Well, that we're still not done. We still have other options. So as you were talking about presuming competence and all that earlier, so it's true. Like, we just have to find the right fit for that individual. Yeah. I guarantee that there is something that will work in all the different options that I'm going to talk about today with every single one of your clients. So there is an option out there, but you just have to be aware of those options. And sometimes it can take a very, very long time to implement. And we have to have that patience to get there. And it helps, of course, to have team buy-in, especially parent buy-in. So we're working with it and doing a ton of parent coaching as well. So that's going to be a huge part of it. So those direct, so like, let's go into those direct selection options. So what am I talking about when I'm talking about direct selection? As I said earlier, so any body part, and this is going to typically be an index finger, but I've worked with kids that use both of their thumbs, and that was what they felt comfortable with. That was their personal preference. Hey, whatever. I don't really care as long as they can efficiently do it.
I had one little girl use her big toe.
Oh, and I was about to talk about an example of us that used their big toe.
Well, she used it for sassy purposes. I mean, this was not like her, like she wanted to sign with me. Oh yeah. She would sign with me, but use her AAC device with her big toe. And when she was at school, she would use her hands for her AAC device. But with me, she would just roll her eyes and give me the business because she was sassy and delightful and joyful. So like, you know.
Okay. You gotta love the sass. You gotta love the sass.
Yes. Okay, continue. I'm so sorry.
No, yeah. Please interject at any point. One cool example, and look him up. You can look him up on probably just Google it, and you can find a video of him accessing his AAC device. All-star user. His name is Chris Klein. His last name, K Leein. And he's a great advocate for all AAC users. So he uses his big toe, not for the SaaS purposes, but for that is his best access point. So he was not able to utilize his hands whatsoever. So his big toe became his access. I believe he uses his left toe, but that may just be how the camera is, you know, how it kind of flips the image. Could be right, his right toe. But anyway, he uses one big toe to access his device, and he is a stellar user. So that's a really good example. There are also options that are extensions of your body. So it doesn't even have to be your direct body part, but it could be a mouth stick or a head pointer. Mm-hmm. So it's an extension of your body, but we still kind of consider that direct access. And something to consider when we're talking about direct selection is screen size and then key guards and touch guides. So if that is what's required, I would suggest it versus trying to go to a different access method, because this direct selection is going to be the most efficient. And if we can get it to be accurate and efficient by just increasing the screen size and adding a key guard and or adding a key guard or touch guide, then do it versus trying to go eye gaze or did you have a question? Sure. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's something that I have had my cup filled significantly the last 6 months, because I've worked in a facility where it's almost exclusively OTs and only a handful of like part-time SLPs, right?
Okay.
So something that I never really grasped was the amount of visual motor integration versus visual perception and overall ocular, how do they phrase it? Ocular muscular fatigue,
sure,
and something called a doll's eye reflex, which Stephen, I hadn't heard of a doll's eye reflex until like 6 months ago.
Sure.
But a doll's eye reflex is where you look out of the corner of your eye and hold it. And for some patients, it could present as a stem, but for some patients, they use it to heighten their peripheral vision for like CVI. But one, I, in retrospect, ever so quickly would take a device and perceive it as not being a functional option, but based off of like my inexperience, but with a quick switch to a black background, like lamp, switching that over to a black background as opposed to the white background. Wow, what a difference it made for my patients that didn't even have a known cortical vision impairment.
Right.
It just alleviated and allowed them to be able to not have to discriminate and work as hard visually. And so I have, instead of having the white background as my go-to, I've switched to having the black background as my go-to for direct access. And it has, I mean, I'll try the white still, but having that one little change made such a profound impact. So I just, and I would not have known that had it not been for all the OTs like filling my cup.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I'll talk about. Like, you have to use your other team members so much. Like, we're not going to be the expert at everything. It's just impossible.
We can't.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm talking to, and we had a situation this school year, literally trying to figure out access for an individual the entire year, trying to find what makes the most sense. And we're still not done. We're still working on it. But we worked so well together, the PT, the OT. And we had a speech pathologist, and I was really kind of like an AT consultant. We had a feeding specialist on the team that was really, really great at AAC. So she had input as well. Then we had the special education teacher having input because they're there every single day with this child. We had the paraprofessional that works directly. He had a ton of input. It was just all and all comes together. But that's especially the OT and PT as far as CVI and thinking about all these different things. And we actually had a vision specialist on that team as well. So it was just crazy how many different voices were in there. And we were coming up with unique solutions that we definitely couldn't have come up with individually. Like, no way. So,
So what did y'all, what was the final decision? What was the outcome for that little one?
All right. So we have a high-tech eye gaze. So we're utilizing high-tech eye gaze. We have low-tech eye gaze boards as well. So we have to have it mounted and positioned very, very specifically. So when he's in transitions, he's doing all these different things. He needs an option to communicate. So we're using low-tech boards for him to be able to communicate in those contexts. So he has both of those things. But then we're beyond that. We're doing a ton of switch access games and things like that. He's not ready to communicate with those, just like we were talking about working on access. So we're working on switches too. Mm-hmm. And so what we ended up going with is a toggle switch, and it was an arm trough. So basically he had his arm supported, and this is something OT and PT were working on alongside the SLP and myself, arm trough with that toggle switch. So what we're doing mm-hmm. now is just trying to get consistent access with that while he's still utilizing the others. And so really long term, he has so many different options when we're doing all these different things. Our long-term thought is, we're going to pair that high-tech eye gaze with that toggle switch. So we're going to minimize fatigue. So he's looking around, he's making selections with his toggle switch versus relying on that dwell time. So this is going to make him way, way more efficient and way less fatiguing. So he can communicate a lot more throughout his day by pairing those two. And then he has some backups. Let's say his high-tech eye gaze isn't working for him. He's too fatigued that day. Then we can use that switch and really long term. Term is to have multiple switches for him so he can mm-hmm. two switch scanning versus, relying on one switch, which is way slower, to have all those different options so he can communicate regardless of the situation. This is a kiddo that has a ton of seizures, very complex case. So his ability to access these things changes from day to day. So that was really where we landed, is like, we're going to do a bunch of different things, but we're going to pick those things and we're going to get really, really good at them so he can communicate literally in any context. And again, like, if he's not able to access his high-tech device, then he can utilize those low-tech options too. So we're kind of hitting it on multiple different levels. So that's kind of, and I just loved how we all worked together to figure that solution out. And you could tell, like, all the team members really enjoyed that whole process to figure that out. And it was like, and it was all about the kid. It was never about any of us, kind of stepping on each other's toes or anything like that. It didn't matter. No one cared whose solution it was. It was what's best for this child. And that was really, really, really fun.
We had Lane Rawls came out, and she's done some in-services at work.
Yeah.
Kelsey comes out. Kelsey's also come out and done in-services. And what I love about when they come and do that is, without that firsthand experience of sitting in the chair and engaging in head tracking or engaging in eye gaze or engaging in, I call it the egg, but the EMG signal with the neural node, I think it looks like an egg. It just kind of cracks me up.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And like, that's kids enjoy that. Like, okay, let's do the egg, but like, or I think it's funny. Like, I'm a comedian. So anyway, but like, without actually trying it, folks, this is fatiguing. This is, it's such a workout. And you wouldn't, on the outside looking in, you don't think it's a workout, but it's akin to all of us that are not athletic passing judgment on the Olympics when we're like, well, that guy clearly didn't run fast enough. And like, when was the last time you got your butt up and actually attempted to do like a quarter of a mile, much less like the jumps? And like, here we are like, oh, all of us become subject matter experts for the day during Olympic season.
Yeah, I think that's hysterical because I'm totally right there doing that.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of part of the fun. Yeah.
Yes. But like, that's just it. So folks, try this. Okay. And then also, Stephen, this has been something that's just, and like, before we go back into like the direct access and indirect access and all of this,
sure.
This is something that's just on my heart. And it's, I have, from a early intervention private practice practitioner's perspective, I have all these little ones that we are trying all these devices with, and then we're sending them to the schools. But what we noticed was that there was this breakdown on that reception end, right? And it was a misunderstanding that because that specific SLP was not part of the AT team, the designated AT team, that they themselves could not use the device or unless they had that consultation. And my suggestion was that this is in our wheelhouse and this is in our scope of practice, and that even if you're not the designated AT individual, if a child's coming in with the device, then we need to carry it over. And so what we did clinically was that we started inviting the local district SLPs to these trainings that we're hosting for free.
Love that.
To try it, right? Right? Because we need to make a bridge and it's free. And we did it during the summer when we're out of school and we're not working. And you know what? People showed up because we built that bridge. And but like, can you talk about that, like, ever so briefly, like, as the, like, former AT lead, like, what role responsibilities? Clarify, please, sir.
Well, 100%. So we see a lot of that. And in that situation that I was discussing, we had the private OT, PT, and SLP at most of those meetings. So we had so many voices within that room. But yes, your concern is very much valid, because most of the time that's not what's going on. It's not that we're doing this collaborative, beautiful team thing together. It's a lot of silos. It's a lot of communication breakdowns. It's a lot of, well, that's not my job, or that's not my responsibility. Yeah. And of course, that's like, no. I feel like one of the things that we were doing, and Aiken County will continue to do this well, because I know all the team members that are kind of replacing my role are just all fantastic SLPs. And that is really not to look at it as an expert model. We're looking at it as a consultative coaching model. This is your child, that the SLP, like, within that school. This is your case that you need to take responsibility of. We will help you as much as possible. We will be at these meetings. We will talk, but we'll come in and do observations. We'll see what's going on, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, and coach you. Because I think it's kind of born out of fear a little bit, or just inadequacy. Like, they just feel like they are not going to do a good job. And I can think of one individual that had a lot of, an SLP that I was working with, that had a lot of issues with that. They just felt like they just were doing it wrong. Honestly, she just needed to get beyond that barrier. And then she's done an amazing job. It's really been cool to see her kind of jump over that barrier, because I think she's never going to go back. I think she's going to take each of these cases just straight to it and not try to avoid it. And I think that's going to be the biggest piece of it. People just feel inadequate a lot of times. And like, I don't know what to do. I don't want to look stupid, or I don't want to do the wrong thing for this kid. They really care about that kid.
That's because we're type A.
Right.
That's because speech pathologists are type A, anal retentive, and we are. And if I know there's an Instagram account for type B SLPs.
Yeah, I'll call that one.
That's not the norm. Yes. Sorry.
No.
Go ahead.
I think you're right on. And that's exactly what this individual was doing. You know, they had to do it perfectly, or they weren't going to do it at all. And it was very, you know, slightly unhealthy way to look at it. And so that's why we were really trying to do this coaching model. We're not just going to take this kid away from you and say, oh, this isn't your responsibility. And then she grew over the years. And now I don't have to be so hands-on with that individual. So I think we continue to coach, and then we're going to move on to these different areas. A new SLP comes in, or a veteran that was working in a different context, a different setting, you know, transitions to a school and maybe didn't even work with PEDS or AAC at all. All right, now I'm going to focus on you, and we're going to coach you. And we do in-services constantly throughout the year. Any opportunities we do, we have those in-services. So that's how we were tackling it. But we are a larger school district, so we had those resources to do it. Think about some more rural school districts that may have just a handful of SLPs that don't have those individuals that can do that coaching model there. So it's a little more difficult. But I think the crux of it is just being very open to continuing to learn. And just being open to maybe not do it perfectly, but you're trying every single day and you'll get there, like, very, very quickly. I think that's just the biggest barriers, like thinking that we have to be 100% perfect, or not have the ability to ask somebody and feel stupid. Like, no, never. Just ask if you don't feel like you're comfortable with something, and then you can get there very, very quickly, because you have all the tools from grad school and your clinical practice and your continuing education. And you may just need just a little bit more information in this particular area, and you're going to jump on board. I've seen it over and over again, that same kind of issue. And sometimes I see the same issue with that barrier staying and people not really getting over it. And it annoys me. But I think...
I feel like it does more than annoy you, but that is the polite answer.
But the thing is, it annoys me, or whatever other word that I'm thinking and not saying. Uh-huh. Because
it's okay. We can edit. Go ahead.
I know that they can do it. You know, I know there's like, just try. And this isn't a knowledge barrier. This is a psychological barrier for you're putting on yourself. And I think that's kind of the crux of it with any of those situations you're referring to. Maybe not all of them. I hope to think that there's no nefarious things going on, but I would imagine that's a ton of it. It's just fear.
Okay. So ladies and gents, my suggestion is this. Did you know that most of the AAC equipment providers, the representatives, can establish long-term loans for your clinic, for your facility, or with you yourself, especially if like you're a private practice and you're, you know, a solo practitioner. And those loans can be upwards of 6 months, or I mean, bless.
100%.
Yeah. The folks that we work with, they just we sign the contract, and the contract does look like you're buying a car and or signing your soul away. But like, you know, que sera, we get that contract and then it's yours to practice with. And what I suggest is take it home, sit down on a quiet night. I mean, pour yourself a lovely glass of mommy juice and just engage with it. Get on it. Watch your kids, your own personal offsprings. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many times I have AAC equipment in my car or in our house and it's going to the clinic, or I'm shipping it back because a trial is concluded. And the kids are back there and they're making sentences and they're trying it out themselves. And they're better at it than I am, but they're a tech generation and I am gray-haired and Botoxed. So like, this was like a learning curve for me. But that helped me overcome it. And now, honestly, in almost every single patient that I work with, even if they don't need it, I always have it with me just in the event of. So there's that. Okay. All right. Back to so check them out. PMS, message us. Steven, real quick, how can they reach you in the world of social media or on Instagram if they have a question for that?
So I have my own personal account, but speech and language songs, I do a lot there. So I create a lot of music and videos for AAC. So you can shoot me a message at speech and language songs. I'm on all the different things. So you just search that and I'm there.
Yes. And then, so message him and then you can get to we can give you recommendations on like those companies and how to do it. Okay. Yeah. But back to what we started on 400 iterations and tangents ago, direct versus indirect access.
Sure. Yeah. And we'll kind of keep going down that road. And so last thing that I was kind of talking about, the direct access, the screen size, key guards, touch guides, those are really a good option. Again, I want to mention a bunch of different things so you just have your mind thinking about all these different options. Because at this point, when I'm looking at a kid and we're working, I'm thinking about all these different things. But if you haven't had, and then I get to draw from experiences like, oh yeah, that really worked well with this kid 7 years ago, you know, and then you start building that library in your brain, and then an evaluation becomes a very different thing for you. Just watching this kid, like, oh, okay, that, you know, it's like, all right, let's try that, you know, I have like seven different, if this doesn't work, then get to that. But that's why I want to provide some of those different options. So your brain is kind of thinking that way too. Oh, maybe this type of switch will work, whatever. So screen size and key guards and touch guides. And I have a really good example of a kid that I worked with this school year that this worked perfectly for. So we started off with an iPad. We're talking vision issues as well as fine motor issues. And a regular iPad just was not working. It wasn't large enough. There wasn't enough space between the different icons, all of that. So we moved to an iPad Pro. We started doing some more thicker borders between each of the icons. We're masking a ton.
Wait, translate masking, not facial mask for COVID. Translate
sorry,
masking.
Good point. So masking, occluding, you're blocking off these icons so they're just blank. So you have a lot more space. Visually, it's less busy. So you're not seeing all these different options. So we only had a handful of options on the screen. And the reason why we do that versus, like, let's say we have four icons that are showing. Instead of having just a big grid of four, we have to think about motor planning and long-term solutions here. So if we occlude those, block those, mask those, instead of just creating a completely different symbol set, so we have those four. Instead of that, let's think of Lamp Words for Life. We have 84 on that screen, and we still have all 84 of those icons available. Like, they're there, mm-hmm. but we block them out, and we only have those four, and then we can slowly add, and those icons never move or change size. So we're developing those strong motor plans, and then we're adding a new word, adding a new word, adding a new word. And we're, and it's just like learning on a keyboard. So let's say I learn, you know, the home keys first, ASDF or whatever, JKL and that, whatever the ones are. So you start there and then you start branching out. If every time I learned a new letter on the keyboard, we changed the sizes of the keys and changed the layout, that would be extremely confusing. So that's kind of the idea of masking, occluding, whatever word you want to use for that. So that's what that is. But so we're doing a lot of that. Still wasn't great. It was okay. We moved to an iPad Pro, larger screen. It was okay. Still not completely where we wanted to be. And then we were working with Katie Lee, PRC Saltillo. And then we ended up going with, after doing a bunch of different trials, we went with an Accent 1400 and had a key guard with it. And that was a game changer. So, and we got very specific with the key guard. So the openings for that key guard, and the key guard is basically just a piece of plastic that is on top of the screen. So he can, and one of the biggest issues, he was laying his hand on the device and then making mm-hmm. a selection, and we couldn't do it. Like, well, that, you have to take your hand off that, you know, so it was just like, this is not working. But as soon as we got that key guard and then the Accent 1400, which has a large screen, super heavy. So that was kind of our, we had to think about, that's not going to be very portable, because he's a very young kid, he's four. So that's not going to be very portable, yeah. But this is the only way he's really going to access it efficiently. And that's okay. So we have like, okay, we're going to have somebody be his transporter at this point until he kind of grows up and gets to the point where he can transition that himself. So that was one of the caveats there. And like, I didn't love that part of it. It's like, but this is going to be the best for him to communicate and access. Anyway, so we utilized that key guard. And as soon as we got that Accent 1400 with the key guard ready to go set up, and we were using Lamp Words for Life on that one, and he just started blossoming. So it was like, we got the access piece out of the way. And so he wasn't really having to deal with that so much. And he was just able to communicate. And so now we're focusing on what we really want to focus on in the first place, because we set up the exact situation for him. We could have easily handed him an iPad and said, this isn't a good fit, and been done. But that's not what we did. We kept working and trying and trying and trying and trying until we came up with a solution that was a little bit better, or way better than just utilizing that iPad. So that's something you have to think about. And so, and that something that you continue on with direct selection, and eye gaze and infrared sensing or head tracking are kind of in that, because you're directly manipulating that device. And you mentioned that we've talked about eye gaze already a little bit, but eye gaze, high tech and low tech options out there. So really think about both of those things. Even if they're really, really, really good users of the high tech options, still have that low tech backup. And I feel like that goes for all of AAC users. Having a low tech backup is never a bad idea. So if something stops working, you will have that. Or even in a context, what we were talking about earlier, you know, we're traveling around, we're going in transitions, we're eating. So all those different things, iLink, one-step low-tech board, or eTran, two-step board is a really cool thing to utilize too. And eTran has like multiple different layers that you can switch in and out depending on what they choose. So basically has, And if we're thinking about like the alphabet and spelling things out, and then they're color coded in each different section of that low tech eye gaze board. So you choose the purple one, and then your communication partner is going to switch it out. Okay, now these are the letters that correspond with that color coded purple board, and then you can continue on there. So an E-Train board is a really cool option too.
Y'all, it's a clear plexiglass. So what he's describing is a clear plexiglass board that the communication partner looks through one side with the communication user on like the other side.
And you got it.
And you can see the letters are color coded, and then there's color blocks around. So when you go to look it up, it's E-Tran, T-R-A-N.
No, thank you. And so those are options, you know, those are additional options, or you can just have that iLink low tech kind of thing, which is just a one step thing, or you can have multiple steps with those type. Then you can really be flexible. It can be clear plexiglass. You can have some that you just make, and if you don't have that available, you can make something and you're just cutting a window out in the middle of it when all the options are all the way around it. So, and there's a lot of things that we've done, you know, in the school district, and just we're making stuff. It doesn't have to be something that you're purchasing. So it can be very, very inexpensive too. So, and of course, there's many great high-tech eye gaze options out there. And I'm sure you've worked with a ton of these different companies. And I've worked with Toby Dynavox options. PRC Saltillo has a ton of options. And then, as you mentioned, Lane earlier, Control Bionics has a lot of options there too. Another option is infrared sensing or head tracking. And this is a little less fatiguing than eye gaze, so it's definitely worth a shot. Traditionally, use a dot between the eyes or on glasses or on a baseball hat or something similar. But in the past few years, there's an iOS update, so the operating system for iPads, iPhones, and things like that, that enabled head tracking. And this was mainly for iPad Pros and iPhones. They didn't have to use any additional equipment or those dots or anything like that. So this technology leveraged the already existing facial ID, and that's technology that we all use on a daily basis. So this works for an iPhone X or iPhone 10 or later, or an iPad Pro that came out in 2018 or later. And I would imagine that iPads, like just a typical iPad, is going to have that capability in the future. So that's a really cool thing. So you don't necessarily have to get additional equipment or anything like that. So you can give that a shot if you have an iPad Pro and so it's going to be difficult with an iPhone. That would only really be useful for very specific contexts. But iPad Pro has that larger screen, so that's worth a shot. But then you have, you know, companies that have equipment as well. You can work with that. And another option is going to be joystick or alternative mice. A bunch of different options here. A Chester mouse, and that's just has one button that you're clicking. An ergonomic mouse, you can have that kind of sideways mouse that can work. A trackpad, roller mouse, joystick with all these different attachment options. We've done that a good bit. One really big success story. I'm working with a kid and worked with the PT and outside ATP to utilize his, he had a power chair, and that joystick that he had on this power chair, we paired with his AAC device. So in conjunction with a keyboard that had a key guard on it as well, and then that joystick that was already existing on his wheelchair, which you have to imagine he's really, really good at because he uses that all day, every day. So we already had that access piece. So we integrated that for his academic assignments as well as his communication needs. And we had so many different configurations until we found like something that actually worked. He looked like he was in mission control over there with like devices all around him. And it was like, okay, this is a little much. And we had, you know, we had to kind of go through that and figure out, okay, we have all kind of technology here for him, but he's not actually being social. And this kid was extremely social. It's because we put up so many barriers in front of him. So that was something else we had to consider. So we ended up dropping it down to all just a mounted Microsoft Surface. And then we found this Mountain Mover mount from Blue Sky Designs that was just so smooth and so easy to move out of his way very, very quickly. And he was able to actually do that as well. So he could look at people in the eye when he was talking to them and do that. So that was another little piece to it that was super, super important. And so then this particular kid, he preferred just using Microsoft Word and just typed in it and used the read aloud function for his communication. We tried all these different things. He didn't want it. He wanted to use that. And we're like, fine, you know, your personal preference is going to come into play here. And that's something that we have to think about, because we were thinking, oh, well, this may be more efficient, that may be more efficient. It was like, well, I'm going to do this. And we're like, okay, we'll get on board with you. Thinking about all those different joysticks, and there's all these different things you can add to joysticks, like massive foam balls. So there's like this little T-mount and a T-stick thing, and the PT and OT and that ATP were super helpful to try out a bunch of things. Again, leaning on those other team members is super, super important. And then, all right, so that's kind of really all of the direct access options. There's a ton of different things. And then you move into this more indirect access. And so we're thinking about switches here. So are we talking about single switches? We're talking about multiple switch control. And what makes someone a good switch candidate? So there's a few things that you need to really think about. Is there consistent, reliable physical movement? So identify that reliable, consistent physical movement. And can they repeat that movement with minimal effort? Because again, we have to think about that movement is going to have to occur over and over and over again. And can they repeat that movement upon request? Can they do it really whenever they want to? And is the activity motivating enough that they want to actually use that switch? So those are a few different things you have to think of. And I'm going to very quickly rattle off some of these types of switches and what they look like. A pressure switch, and this is super, super common, and activate with varying amounts of pressure, big reds, Orbeez, pillows, so many more. But that's probably the most common type of switch that you see out there. Touch, just activate when you touch it, but there's no need to actually provide pressure or movement. You just have to touch those things. Pow pad, wafers, plate switches, star switches, a tongue touch switch, and we'd use those with students that was really their most consistent movement. I can think of one kiddo in particular that we've worked with over the past few years, and that was it. Like, that was the place to go. Was he was able to access that switch with his tongue, but we didn't have any other places that we could go for consistent movement.
Can you share what the etiology was, what the little one had?
I really don't remember, to be honest with you. I remember utilizing that tongue touch. It's kind of like a plate switch, but specifically made to be used with a tongue. But I do not remember the etiology. Sorry.
Okay. No. This is my thought process. Yeah. I remember when I first moved to South Carolina, Carol told me, Dr. Carol Page, she's the director of the Assistive Technology Office for South Carolina. She said, Michelle, you got to remember you want to start where you want to end.
Yeah.
So folks, when you're thinking about this and he's rattling off all these different access points, you also have to understand what is the patient's etiology and comorbidities that you're working with. Because if they have a condition that is deteriorating in nature, then, and we don't want to think about that, especially in the world of pediatrics, but that is, we see it, right? I mean, I've worked with palliative hospice care calls and little ones in their winter season, right? But when we're going through that, you just, when you're looking at access points, where are we going to go? So, sorry, that's what my thought process
is. Yeah, absolutely. Continue. And this was actually a high school student.
Okay.
That changed it a little bit, but I honestly don't recall what the etiology was. But yeah, that's a great point. Well, always, with all of these different things, even thinking about the motor planning that we talked about earlier, I mean, you're keeping the end in mind always. Yeah. So that's a great point. And so I'll keep rolling with these different types of switches. Movement, activate by sensing movement with actually no physical contact. Some of these switches could be proximity switch and untouchable. There's even these like tilt switches that you can actually be gripping in client's hand and they can just tilt one direction or the other to access it. But because if they didn't have the ability to actually press down on the switch or even touch it, but they could just tilt one arm, that could be an option. There are temperature switches, which I've never even used a temperature switch. These are activated by sensing a change in temperature, but it's really cool that those things are out there. A sound switch,
That's very cool, but I'd be so, it's hotter than Hades outside right now. And I'm just thinking if we went outside, that whole thing could just go, brrr, but right. Yes. Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. That, like, yeah. Like I said, I know that it's a thing, but I'm never actually used it functionally in the world. That. So, you know, you may be listening like, oh, that's a good fit for my kit. But yeah, I'm not sure what the actual application is there. But those are things that are out there. So sound, and this is a really cool one, the activate by sound or vocalization. And one example of this is the self-calibrating auditory tone infrared. So you just, all you have to do is make a sound. And basically you have like this headset with this microphone right in front of the client's mouth, and they just make a sound to activate that switch, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I've used that before. And pneumatic ones, and this is kind of thinking of old school, but it's definitely something that we still use, and I've definitely used these a good bit. Pneumatic, activate by a puff of air. So mostly I used to think of like just sip and puff, which is a dual switch. There's quad puffs, and then there's the grip switch that is actually like you're applying pressure to it and is pushing air through it. So you can do that with your hand, typically is how we use those grip switches, and it's sending air through that to activate it. There's this guy, his name, or his self-proclaimed name is the Quad Father. So he's a quadriplegic who's a computer programmer who is hilarious. So he started coding like many, many, many years ago. I'm talking like 30, 35 years ago. And he was coding only using a sip and puff. So you would have to imagine how fatiguing and how crazy that was to code with just a sip and puff switch, because you had to go through all your different options on a keyboard till you got to the key that you wanted. Then you select that one. Then you move to the next one. Just insane.
Yeah, that's – sorry. Christian's trying to teach the boys how to code now.
Yeah, yeah.
And like – okay, wait, let's just preface this. They're 7 and 9, and he's teaching the boys how to code. And he's like, baby, they can be really good hackers. And I'm like, why are we discussing this? And he's like, trust me, the military needs really good hackers. And I'm like, wouldn't it be anti-hacking? But like, okay, I digress. But like, okay, and this guy is called the Quad Father. I'm doing the Google. This is amazing.
Yeah, he calls himself that. So I was watching the Apple's WWDC, that Worldwide Developers Conference. So I was watching, and he was doing a keynote, and this was just a few years ago. And it was amazing. His story was so amazing. And really, what he was focusing on is talking about how technology has continued to progress and the accessibility features. And he's mainly, I mean, it's Apple's conference. So he was mainly focusing on Apple's accessibility features and all these different options. And now he's able to do so, so much. And this is a person that he can speak and he can, so he was able to say whatever he wanted to. So not necessarily AAC, but as far as the access method part of it, which is absolutely unreal. But now he's able to dictate whatever he wants directly into the computer with ease. So it's crazy to think of how much freedom he has now, because he can go into his house, turn on the lights, turn on the TV, and he wasn't able to do any of that. Open his door, lock his door, go for walks, you know, with his wheelchair, and just his whole world is wide open because of these technological developments that we've made. It was just very, very inspiring listening to him, because he was just so, so positive. And so just inspiring to listen to. Anyway, so that was kind of an aside, but I found that very interesting. He was a really cool guy. And another option, and you talked about it earlier, electromyography, EMG, and I think of NeuroNode here.
Yeah. The egg.
So, and that's not something that I haven't used any other ones outside of the NeuroNode. So that's kind of my go-to, Lane Riles, Control Bionics for when that's needed. And so an EMG is just the measurement of electrical activity associated with the activation of a muscle group. So you don't necessarily even have to be able to touch anything. You just have to activate that. So it's really cool. And the trilogy that they have going on with Control Bionics is a really cool setup, utilizing eye gaze, and then you can have EMG. And I like the idea, we talked about that earlier with the kiddo that I was talking about, using eye gaze and using a toggle switch. But it's kind of the same thing, using eye gaze, but using the EMG as kind of your mouse click. So that's going to make it way, way more efficient. And then the Trilogy piece of it, then you have direct selection, and that really kind of comes into play for communication partners. So I love that idea, because you don't have to rely on that dwell time, and it just makes it so much less efficient and fatiguing. So I really like that part of it. And so the next piece of it is one versus two switches. So I talk about all these different switches. So why would I use two, or why would I use one? And really, when it comes down to if they're able to use two switches, then give them two switches. And so it's a little bit different if they're doing eye gaze plus a switch or something like that. But if they're not doing something paired like that, then I would suggest two switches if they're able to. Because two switches are so much more efficient in comparison to just one switch. You have to utilize automatic scanning with just one switch. Dwell time comes into play, like I was just talking about. And this can be very slow, cognitively taxing, and just frustrating.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. Guys, when he's talking about dwell time, when you're using this access method, it's how long is the specific icon, the specific word or image that you want to communicate, you have to like be on that icon for a set period of time. And it could be like 1 second, it could be 3 seconds, but you can change the dwell time. Sorry, continue.
No, I appreciate you. You gotta keep jumping in and saying that, clarifying okay. things I'm saying. I appreciate that. I need you around all the time. When I'm just rattling things off and people are like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I need Michelle just to sit there like, this is
just the thing. Translate.
But just like throw up a hand, like, okay, you're getting a little too in the weeds, and you need some. Yeah, have a tendency of doing that. So thank you.
Gotcha.
So yeah, and another piece with that is you have to pause at like, I want to take a break for a second. You know, you have to pause that, or you're going to start selecting things that you don't want to select because it's always going. So using two switches is going to be the way to go. But, you know, if that's not an option, that's okay. And I've seen some really efficient single switch users just rocking it. So it's definitely a thing, but definitely consider two switches if that's possible. And single switch, you know, requires more visual concentration, cognitive focus. You must have very good timing, because if you miss it with that single switch, that automatic scanning, because you're just going through icons, you may be going through like different sections of the screen that you're selecting. But if you miss the one that you want, you're going to have to wait for it to go all the way back around again. So you have to have really good timing. So that's consistent focus all the time. And so obviously it's going to take a much longer for a user to select things. So the communication piece of it, that social piece of it, is tougher because there's just so much slower communication time. And so that's pretty much it as far as those different two switches versus one switch. Like, always try to do two switches if at all possible. All of these different access methods that we're talking about. And let's say, and I know we're really focusing on complex cases today. So let's say communication and access, doing that all at one time isn't feasible at the moment. That's okay. That's okay. So we don't need to leave any of these kiddos behind. It's like, well, they're not able to meet that goal. We need to move. Well, we can't do this with them at all. No, we can practice the access method. So we can get really good at that. And we can do that through playing games as well.
Yes.
And then we can add those, the communication piece and the access method together later on down the road. Again, we can still be working on communication pieces, again, low tech or something like that in the meantime.
Wait, can I interject, because I have the perfect example?
Yeah, go.
Yes. Okay. So folks, I have this little bitty guy who, he was one of the first patients that I was able to like recognize. I got so excited, I like almost choked on my spit just there. Oh my God. Okay. He was one of the first little ones that I actually recognized the doll's eyes in, and like learned the doll eyes reflex with this little guy. And okay. So PMH loosely, we had neonatal abstinence syndrome, grade 3, maybe a grade 4 hemorrhagic CVA, impacted frontal lobe, as well as a cerebellum. We have mixed cerebral palsy secondary to the hemorrhagic infarct, IVH, and is non-speaking. But again, non-speaking does not mean that we don't have something to convey. And he was able to reach for two objects to discriminate between two objects. We had socially, we can convey what we want through happy sounds, unhappy sounds, That's where we're at. Hemiplegic on the left side, retracted right side, we use raking finger grasp. And so we can't isolate our index finger. And it would, so if he's reaching to activate a toy, it was also very inconsistent. Lots of aversions to different surfaces. We didn't want to play with buttons. We've attempted switches, and he honestly would see them and chuck them because he's opinionated, as such any four-year-old should be, right? Still a stinky, smelly little boy, which my boy mom heart just like freaking loves, and wanted to be messy on his terms, just his terms, right? So we pulled out, I had a company come out, and it was Kelsey. She came out and we set up the head tracker on Zuvo. Am I saying that right? Zuvo 13. I'm saying that right.
Yeah,
right?
Yep. That's how I say it too. So.
Yeah. But the way the alphabetical soup on that one, I am not the Arctic therapist, folks. So anyways, and you know what? We set it up so he could also have direct access. He could also reach for, and it was simply the games. Y'all, they have a game on there that's just farting clouds. You look at it and it farts. And you know what? That four-year-old engaged. And when I mean engaged, he started belly laughing. And like to the point that like he almost fell out of like the assistive chair. So we had to like actually buckle him in that time. So like, which we don't normally do. But like he thought it was the greatest thing in the world and it was farts. And I was like, oh my God, you are such a little boy.
That's a boy all the way through. That's hilarious.
Right. But like that was how we got him to bridge over to communications. So then we like worked in on a different device. And you know what? That actually, he got so into it when Dad and I were modeling on the device how we could actually touch it. And then the pie in the face game, or like he started using his right hand and then he started using his left non-dominant hand to actually reach out and make fart clouds. And like OT was ecstatic, like everybody's happy. And now he's like, I don't know, Steven, I think for this kid at like, it was the first time family got that he was a little boy.
Right.
And
right.
Not, and so all of a sudden, he started playing with the world. Steven, we are so far over, but like this case, like he started playing and now he's on the ground and like he started like reaching for and moving towards like his trial device. And he started like these little bitty, like this is below the clavicle, but it's like a rudimentary like crawl.
Yeah.
And but he wants to make things fart.
Right.
And yes. Okay. Well, sorry.
Whatever engages. So that farts work. And I'm assuming is that look to learn? Is that kind of set?
Oh, game? Yeah. I should have probably named the program. Yeah, it's look to learn and it's one of their games. But like, it's the farting game and everybody needs a farting game.
Especially the boys.
Yes.
Look to learn, yeah. And there's some other options to kind of pair. Help kids learn. I really like that, especially for switches. And so really, really a lot of different options there. Xbox, have you messed with the adaptive controller or seen that? So Microsoft came out with that one.
I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. So we set it up and we had an Xbox and we set it up with a Rocket League, especially cars playing soccer. So when we were setting it up, you could do more complex configurations they were able to actually do everything with. But then some other situations, they were only able to do the boost, you know, if they were just doing single switches. But I was using the joystick to kind of guide it, and then they would just boost around, and that was super, super motivating. And there's a way to do switch games now, and you can adapt a controller, and really whatever button you want to do, you can have all the buttons and do all of it and have 20 switches, or you can have one or two that makes the character jump or whatever. So you can adapt and do any of those things. So, but help kids learn and look to learn. The ones that are already on the devices, especially for eye gates you're talking about, are easier to use because some of those adaptive controllers, I mean, you got to really start working on that to get it all the technology to work well. So I really like some of those that are already built in. And you're talking about somebody from Talk to Me Technologies, Wyatt's my person from Talk to Me Technologies, Lane Rock.
Yeah, hi, Wyatt. We love you, Wyatt.
So he's the one I interface with more. They can show you how to use all those things and really work on those access methods. So those are super, super good.
Okay, wait, while we're there, I also just have to thank Darlene with Talk to Me Technologies, because she has helped me so many times when like I may or may not have sat on a key guard or a key guard had taken off when I'm trying to like program and add a new word like on the fly in therapy. And it got put on a trampoline and one kid jumped on it. Oh, we had a kid learn to jump off the screen of his device. But OT was really happy because he cleared it with 2 feet. Thank you, Talk to Me, for replacing the screen.
Yeah, they've been very kind over the years, especially with just allowing trials to move around. And I've had some of these devices for years, and they're still okay with that. Yeah, they're super easy to work with.
Folks, they do not pay us to say these things, but like legit, they make our lives better.
We're not getting any commissions.
Yeah, no, we just, thank you. We are better. We are not worthy. Oh, wow. Just made me old, but I love Mike Myers. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So anywho, for all the millennials in the room know what I'm talking about. Everybody else is like, what is she referencing? Okay. Stephen, we like legit went so far over, but I love this. And folks, if you work with children that have a language delay or disorder, AAC is in your wheelhouse. You don't have to refer out to somebody else. You should be doing this too, right? It's amazing. And there's tools out there and there's resources and people to support. Okay, Stephen, per the usual, we're going to have you come back because we're going to need.
I'm glad to come back anytime.
Here's my idea for the next one.
Okay.
I want to do an episode about goal writing for AAC, but making sure it's neurodiversity affirming.
Cool.
Okay. Yay. Everybody was like, yes, because I hate writing goals. Also, spoiler alert, you don't need to write 400 goals. You can write 3 goals and that's good enough. Yeah. So like,
and I know there's a lot of there's a lot of different ways to slice that, but I like a lot of pragmatic functions. So it's really kind of broad, but we're focusing on different ways of communicating. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we don't have to have all these highly detailed, complex, multiple goals. No, I feel like those really kind of give, you know, a lot of flexibility without overcomplicating it.
Yes. Because I have an idea for a project, but that will. It has not yet made it to the cork board next to my desk. Right. It's still in my head, so it's going to have to wait.
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So one more time, if folks want to reach you or follow you, where can they go to reach out?
Yeah, any speech and language songs is my handle and all the different social medias. Feel free to follow me or send me a message or anything like that. That's pretty much it.
Excellent. And folks, if you can't find him on the world of social media, please be sure to check out his beautiful bride's amazing pubs. And they are one more time, Stephen.
So she has the Alley Downtown Tap Room, and that's downtown Aiken, Whiskey Alley, which is downtown Aiken, and Draft Society, which is downtown Augusta.
So just make a day trip.
Yeah.
Or like 3 days.
You can hit all 3 in one night. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, with an Uber.
Yeah. Let me know. I'll drive you back and forth. I'll be your chauffeur. And I'll be your tour guide.
Excellent. Stephen, thanks, man. Hang on one second, okay?